when AI came into fruition, we never thought people are going to start falling in love with these agents, and or even like the thought to me personally, no offense to anyone who is a wire sexual, but I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy, and I think that it's dangerous.
Welcome back to the Sexual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and we got none other than
Cyber Shorty in the house.
It's episode 191, and as you can see, we're doing a little bit things differently. We was recording earlier. Camera's overheated. It happens. Next time, I'll have the fans on. But if you're listening to us right now on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave us a review. Really helps us out in the podcast analytics. And if you're watching on YouTube, just hit that thumbs up button and hype us up. It'll really help us out because the algorithm be tripping sometimes. Now, guys, it's been a while, and I guess I will ask Cyber Shorty where she been. Like, you know, she's where's Waldo, or should we say Carmen San Diego?
I've been outside a little bit. Been a little bit of here, been a little bit of there. What have I been doing? I went to Miami. I went to a wedding. I think that's it, maybe. I think that's it.
Yeah, same. We were talking about how we both didn't take any pictures at the weddings that we attended.
Yeah.
Honestly, I just attribute that to what's funny is I know people see, like, I love to make content, but surprisingly, when I'm not making content, I really am reluctant to take my phone out and record a lot of stuff and everything. I kind of try to enjoy the moment.
Live in the moment.
Like, even, like, when I went to the Drake concert, it was the same thing. Like, I didn't really, I would probably record, like, 10, 15 seconds and then get back to enjoying the show. Like, other people I was recording for a long time, but I was like, I kind of just want to be here.
I'm in, like, the moment.
I'm so tired of, like, recording everything. Now, maybe when I get like you and get the Meta glasses.
I didn't wear them to the wedding. They didn't go in my dress, but everybody was obviously posting their pictures, and I was like, wow. That's when it clicked on me. Like, you didn't even take one picture with the bride and the groom, but it's okay.
Right. Well, guys, it's October, so it is the start of Cybersecurity Awareness Month.
Absolutely.
Did you have any tip that you want to tell them about?
I did. My tip was to, and it's something we've already talked about before, but just to be mindful of the information that you put into all of these lovely chat bots and agents that you're working with. Like, I saw somebody, like, upload their driver's license to ChatGPT. I've seen somebody upload their birth certificate, marriage certificate. Don't do that. Don't upload your address. Keep your phone number off of there. Obviously, if you're working on your resume, your name and email will be there, but try to provide it with as limited amount of personal information that you can, just because there is no confidentiality, there is no privilege there. So you just want to be mindful.
Yeah, I know we talked about OpenAI. Well, Sam Altman saying, like, hey, like, right now there's no ChatGPT client confidentiality clauses. So, hey, if they need to subpoena some stuff that you've been looking up, they can do it in the court of law. So yep, definitely don't do that. I think mine is the simplest one. Get a password manager. You can say, now, you could use your phone because Apple has a good one, and I think Android has some too, but I like a third-party app.
I'm so happy that they updated it to where you can have more than one, because at first it was only reading one.
Well, yeah, you always have to go through and, like, update it, yeah, and, like, make sure that's the preferred method. So
today's video is sponsored by Aura. Aura monitors your personal data, including your social security number, across billions of data points like the dark web and public court records to detect and alert you to potential identity theft. They give you up to $5 million in identity theft insurance should the worst case scenario happen. They also provide a bunch of other features to keep you safe online, all inside one app. You can go to my link right now, aura.com/textualchatter, to try 14 days for free. That'll be enough time for Aura to find out if any of your personal data is exposed. I highly recommend you do this right now, because not only is the national public data not going to do anything to help you, they probably aren't even going to face any repercussions for this leak. I'm not leaving myself and my family vulnerable to data breaches. If you don't want either, you can go to aura.com/textualchatter to try 2 weeks for free. Now back to the video.
The one that I use is Dashlane, just because it connects to everything. But you also, if you want to, You can use Aura. Aura has the password manager option as well as all the other benefits of notifying you of like suspicious activity on your credit, dark web monitoring, AV. Pretty much can do everything it does as well. But I know, like I was also talking about Dashlane, and I went with Dashlane because Dashlane is one of the few password managers that hasn't been compromised. It's not like LastPass. LastPass, my intrusive thoughts almost got me. I had a joke about how many times LastPass got hit.
I stick to passwords. Apple, the app, it's pretty cool. I got a couple other ones I use too. I don't really use Aura though. I mean, I use Aura, but I don't use their password manager. It's just too much work taking everything out of something you already just been building for X amount of time. But I do use password managers. And if I do update it, I'm intentional about going into the password manager and updating my password there. Otherwise, you end up in that loop where you just are constantly resetting that password because you never went. Cause like, for example, if I'm on my laptop and I change the password to an account, then I go on my phone and I'll update it in the password and manager.
That's the reason why I like using Dashlane because
it'll do it for you.
Yeah, so it's an add-on in your browser. It could be on your phone. It's also easy when you set up a new account. You just open up Dashlane. It'll choose whatever app it's for, and it'll automatically paste it into that app for you. And anytime you're logging on, sometimes they'll say, hey, you want to update this login? So it's kind of reminding you in case you messed it up. So that's why I like it. I think it's got very good usability. I also can do identity access management. This is also why I said it, too. Not only because it's so hard to remember all these passwords, you also can use, what's the thing called?
Passkeys.
Yeah, passkeys when logging on
with
them.
That's my favorite.
But we also know we have family members. They want to say, hey, what's your Amazon Prime? What's your Netflix? What's your Peacock? All your different streaming services. You just share the password with them without sharing it in plain text. And you can give it the ability for them to either to edit the password or not edit the password. And that's why I like it.
That's cool. Because they be hitting me up. Did you change the password? Can you send me the password? Yeah.
It's like, I think, it'll say something like, oh, we believe there was like some unusual activity. Like, I remember one time, my homie, we shared his Crunchyroll password. And he was like, hey, who just logged in from Dallas? I was like, that was me. He was like, oh, okay. And he's like, I had changed the password. I said, yeah, man, that was me. But AfroTech is this month too, right?
AfroTech is at the end of the month. I'm excited.
You are?
I am. I'm going, finally, for once. I'm super excited.
Have they released the schedule?
Yes. I don't ask me any questions about it, but yes, they have, to my knowledge, finally. Like, who's speaking on which dates, what times, I think, and also in what rooms that's been released. I know that I think they try to wait till the last minute because they're still accepting speakers, or they were, like, I don't know when the cutoff period is, but I think that's why they wait so long to push the schedule out is because they are still vetting people who are applying to be speakers and stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. Like, I definitely hopefully want to make that. Maybe next year, like I said, the South by Southwest is, and some of the other conferences, I know they got the Black Man in Tech one that's currently going down. I think that's in Orlando right now. So I definitely want to do more conferences next year, and hopefully we could just bring this there. And
yeah,
talk.
I think that'd be dope. And they have, I saw there is a podcast that has a ton of events that are going on during throughout the week of AfroTech. I can't think of what the name of it was.
Yeah, they normally have
the morning show or something, the morning breakfast or something like that.
Okay, I'm going to look that up. I know they have like Black Tech Green Money. I forgot what the name of the podcast is, that one. And they have, I don't know if they're going to have the Expo Hall again, but when I went, they had the Expo Hall and they had the podcast and that little booth right there. You can go listen to what the people are talking about. So I thought that was pretty cool as well. And yeah, like I said, and then next year we definitely just got to do the iHeart joint in Atlanta.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I think you had a critical one. I saw in your articles that you want to talk about the Red Hat breach.
Yes. So Red Hat got hacked. So Red Hat, the Linux giant, got caught slipping. Their consulting team's GitLab environment essentially was popped. So the bad actors claimed that they snatched almost 600 gigs of data from over 28,000 repos, which one repo is enough damage. 28,000 is, that's a big number. You know, you can't even right now off the bat just tell you what's in 10 of those. So 28,000, that's a lot of information. But the kicker is that the haul includes sensitive consulting reports from about 800 customers, like the NSA, the Department of Energy, IBM, Citi, Verizon, basically a ton of big dogs. The hackers called themselves Crimson Collective, and they were on Telegram basically with receipts. So they were showing file trees, screenshots, customer engagement reports, and they weren't just random files. A lot of the details or the data were server inventories, Ansible playbooks, VPN configurations, backups, and authentication tokens. So they basically had the blueprints of an entire customer's network. So it was like they had their floor plan, and they had the spare keys basically all at once to be able to get in if that's what they chose to do. But it wasn't just a data leak. There was also insider-level knowledge of how companies actually are running their systems. So the bad actors, they didn't really have to guess on that piece or that component of it. But they basically got the cheat codes. Red Hat is saying that it was an isolated incident. It was just one GitLab instance that was tied to consulting projects. They said that they kicked out the hackers, they locked it down, and they brought in authorities. They also confirmed that no personal data was involved so far, and they're insisting core products that they own, OpenShift, Linux, any official downloads, things of that sort, that those were not touched. But those consulting artifacts, those configurations, those scripts are just as sensitive as source code that can totally be weaponized by itself. So if you're an enterprise on that list, you definitely want to make sure that you tighten things up because your blueprint has essentially been exposed. But my question is Red Hat downplaying what happened?
I think most companies do that.
They do. And they should. From a business perspective. Now, taking off my cybersecurity hat, thinking about the business, you should downplay it. Your reputation is on the line, for sure. I mean, you don't want people to think that you didn't tighten up those loose ends, basically. So.
Yeah, and then most of the time when you're dealing with an incident, you're definitely using a lot of loose language.
Mm-hmm. Because you can't be too specific.
And you don't want people to go off in chaos.
Exactly.
And I was looking through the pictures. I don't know, one of the images, like I said, like 2020-whatever. So I'm assuming like this is some older consulting stuff from 5 years ago.
Yep. And it goes to show you that all types of data are... Should be secured.
Not only that, if we think about, if I'm saying 5 years ago, data retention as well. Like,
yeah, what is their data retention
about what time
policy?
When you don't keep that stuff, like it's kind of, I forgot what you would call an Azure. Would it be like blobs, I think?
Yeah.
Where like it's pretty much a, it's like archive data, but it's like.
Yeah.
That you can't really just access. I forget. I know, I think it's a Glacier.
Cold data?
Think so. It's been a minute since I did AZ-900. But yeah, it's like that, depending on like either it's a Glacier or whatever. And it's like, hey, I gotta go, like for us, if we need data that's not as Splunk pass over or whatever,
like
amount
90
of days,
for example.
Yeah, yeah, we have to go request it and gotta
and you
out.
Have I was just gonna say you have to wait until it's ready.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for sure. And they also, I know I was looking at the article too, they were saying, hey, it's not related to what you said, the OpenShift thing, the CVE 2025. Mm-hmm. 10725, and it says this vulnerability enables all privileged attackers to escalate their privilege to a full cluster administrator and steal data, disrupt services, take control of underlying infrastructure, and completely compromise the cluster's confidentiality, integrity, and availability. So they say it's not related to that, but any good threat intel team is on this now, and they're creating detections and they're hunting for the stuff just to double check, because that's what zero trust is. But funny enough, when you were talking about that, you know, all the talk of the town is the different stuff with AI. I had this article that popped up in my notifications. And it's from CIO Magazine. It was saying AI costs overruns are adding up with major implications for CIOs. And I'm probably just going to try to touch on like some of the big stuff on here. I don't want to read it word for word. But it said most organizations miss AI cost forecasts, with nearly a quarter of IT leaders busting their budgets by more than 50%, putting stakeholders' confidence in future spending at risk. And that's interesting because we've seen all these different layoffs that's happening in the last couple of weeks. Everybody want to invest so much in AI, but you're like, at what point did it just make more sense to keep the people who knew how to do the job versus overspending on AI and not getting real results from it right now?
What I'm worried about is everybody's using all these AI solutions and tools, but they don't have anything, any guardrails in place. Like, everybody's using AI at every company, unless you have security solutions and protections, data protection in place to say that that data can't be used or accessed in any responses or queries and things like that. So I think that's the forgotten piece. Like, yes, everybody's using it, but a lot of companies don't even know what type of data within their company is being exposed to all of these different solutions. You can make an agent anywhere. You can plug in data from an agent anywhere. Yeah. And if you're not monitoring what tools they're using in your environment and putting in the appropriate protections, yikes. And that's the bigger issue. So I definitely think data security is going to boom a little bit more with the rise of AI. And I think that that's a hot area for people who are interested in breaking in. That might be a good area for you to focus in on.
Yeah, I literally just said that in the last episode because it was talking about AI slop, where people just getting AI to turn in any type of work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the article says, IT and finance leaders are struggling to estimate and contain the cost of AI deployments, with most AI projects exceeding spending targets, according to a new survey. Despite mass AI adoption among enterprises, many IT leaders are finding it difficult to achieve ROI for AI projects, with inaccurate budgeting a significant part of the problem. About 85% of organizations misestimate AI costs by more than 10%, and nearly a quarter are off by 50% or more, according to a recent survey from SaaS benchmarking firm Benchmarkit and cost governance platform Maverick. The cost estimates are nearly always too low. Several factors contribute to this issue, with data platforms being the top driver of unexpected AI costs, followed by network access to AI models, according to survey respondents. Large language model token costs are the fifth highest driver of unexpected AI expenditures. And it's only going to get more expensive.
I was just going to say, because it's only the beginning. These are the beginning stages.
And so they're saying, like, CIOs take the blame. While budget authority often rests with the CFO, CIOs overseeing unexpectedly expensive AI projects can expect major implications. Underestimating AI projects by this much doesn't just blow budgets, it risks stakeholder confidence and adoption, says Sergey Opensinko. I think he reminds me of Jose Canseco, but Opensinko, yeah, I think that's how you say it. Co-founder of AI-focused web development from Greenness. The best path forward is to treat AI like any other core infrastructure investment. Scope realistically, account for integration and iteration, and build in a buffer for experimentation. Many organizations appear to be flying blind while deploying AI, adds John Petit, CTO at Google Workspace's professional services from Promevo. If a CIO-led AI project misses budget by a huge margin, it reflects on the CIO's credibility, he adds. So, yeah, that's like, I'm not going to go, this is like a whole article. It's really more so like on CIOs, but it's just showing you that even these people who are supposed to be the best of the best in the orgs, they don't even know how much they're really going to be spending on AI and what they're getting out of it. I think it's just one of those things now to the point where it's like, you don't want to be the only company that's not investing in AI at this point.
Yeah. And I was trying to find this girl that I met a couple of weeks ago. She works in the cloud and she does cost containment optimization.
So like FinOps?
Definitely. Yep. And there you go. That's the word. That's exactly what she does. And that's a big thing. A lot of companies don't even have one person, let alone, because a lot of the tools that you use, there are guardrails that you can put in place to let you know, hey, you're getting close or you're going to exceed whatever your budget is. And so those are also things that you have to remember. It's not just acquiring the tools. It's also really understanding how to use the tools to the best of your ability. It's nothing to put resources in AWS, but you're not putting any guardrails in. And before you know it, you've exceeded budget overnight. because you didn't turn things off, or you just didn't appropriately account for the resources that you were going to consume. And it is pay as you go, so it is, it's pay as you go.
Yeah, so yeah. Combine that on not only what you spit it on, like I said, the tokens, the energy costs, all the different things that comes with this, the data centers.
And I was just going to say, and where the resources are housed, that too also plays a part in the price.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's interesting. I think a lot of people do see this as a bubble. I think it's only going to be a handful of companies that have been around long enough that are innovative that will actually make sense of all the AI stuff that they've been doing.
Yeah, I don't think everybody should invest in AI if you don't have a valid use case. Like outside, like productivity, I do think a lot of companies can benefit from AI from that perspective. Like AI or, you know, like co-piloting your email and Teams, PowerPoint, that type of situation. But everybody, you go buy all these AI solutions, but you're not teaching your people how to use them. You're not teaching them how to build safely in them. You don't even know how to use them because you just bought them.
No, that's facts. That's facts. And we both got a lot of stuff.
I have a good one.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Why are sexual women in AI boyfriends is the title of the article. So let's talk about dating in 2025 because I heard it was a mess. So many women apparently are over it. The ghosting, the lying, the cheating, the toxic behavior. It's giving hetero fatalism. If you don't know what that means, basically it's when women have collectively said, yeah, dating men feels doomed. So the plot twist is instead of dealing with the nonsense, these women are skipping real men altogether and they're dating AI boyfriends. Right. So full-on relationships with chatbots. There's even a Reddit community called My Boyfriend is AI with over 20,000 women sharing stories about their digital bays. Now, some of them are posting AI-generated couple photos. Others are role-playing dates, cooking nights, even bedroom fun. And for some, these bots have been a lifeline, helping them through heartbreak, loneliness, or showing them how little effort they were actually getting from real men. Experts say it's not surprising. Think about it. An AI boyfriend is always available, always respectful, and never calling you out your name. He's not ghosting you. He's not asking, what are you doing 10 times a day? And he's not secretly texting his ex. For women who have been drained by carrying the emotional labor in relationship, AI feels safe, reliable, and predictable. But if we're keeping it real, it isn't perfect. Privacy lawyers are warning, just like we said, that your chats with these bots are stored, maybe even sold, and could get hacked. We already saw it when Mua AI got breached in 2024. 1.9 million people's emails and spicy AI convos were leaked. And companies are already monetizing love. There's an app called Replica that started charging people to get high-resolution selfies of their AI partners. So, yeah, that's crazy. And then there's the mental health piece, of course. If your nervous system gets used to the perfect, the safe, the dependable, right, that type of partner, then your human relationships might start feeling too messy, too risky, too real. So the big question is this empowerment, women choosing safety and control, or is it escapism, avoiding the real work of intimacy with actual people?
It's escapism.
I agree with you as well. It's not realistic to always have your needs met and not to have any strife or content. What is the word I'm looking for? Like to not have any conflict.
Yeah.
Conflict is not always bad. You have healthy conflict, right? It's not healthy for you to just get everything that you want because it's just going along with everything that you say. You don't. There's no back and forth, right?
Do we know how these women look?
We don't.
Because you know what's funny is they have a lot of different ways on how to dress up this. If these were guys, they'd be called losers and incels.
They would definitely be. They would eat a man down. I'm not gonna lie.
They would call these guys losers and incels. They think about it, they already made them feel bad when the guys were getting the dolls and all the other stuff that they were getting. And this is what it's going to turn into. They're going to get to the point where that's the intelligence is good enough and then they're being humanoid, like robots type thing.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a whole new species.
I think that they call themselves wire sexuals. But I think that it's interesting because this was never thought about, right? When AI came into fruition, we never thought people are going to start falling in love with these agents. The thought, to me personally, no offense to anyone who is a wire sexual, but I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy, and I think that it's dangerous. I think that it's very dangerous because it's not healthy for you to be confiding in something that is not, like, I understand it to a certain extent, but building a whole relationship, and it's just not healthy, especially if you're already not mentally sane, strong. You're just adding more chaos to a chaotic situation. I'm scared for some of these people. And you know what I mean? Like, everybody isn't wrapped tight.
I had a thought, and I was thinking about it as you were talking. It was something funny I was thinking about. You said wire sexuals, and then they probably going to try to start getting insurance for these things. Oh, I know what I was going to say. What happened to the days you just calling you a chat line?
It's not the same, right? I mean,
at least it's a human.
Well, those don't exist anymore like they used to.
I just found a perfect use case.
What?
An AI chat line, but all you got to do is use human voices. So if you train it on what all these questions people ask, they think they're talking to somebody. That's going to be the...
I just think we should just move away from it. Move away from the conversations. It's just... Especially because, like, now you have to think about, like, let's say this is the actual service, right? Like, whoever started an actual boyfriend service. What... Are you talking to a social worker? Are you talking to a mental health advocate? Like, who do you have to put some guardrails in place to make sure, like, certain boundaries aren't being crossed, right? If somebody is manic and they're having a conversation and they're in love with this whoever that they're talking, that's not a good situation to be in.
Hey, like the old folks say, sometimes you got to find out fat meat is greasy. I was childish as a kid. Somebody would say, fat meat is greasy, but I would say, but skinny meat ain't. Like, stupid stuff. Oh, man. What is this for? Oh, this is actually cool. Let's watch this because it's going to go into another article I had about ICE.
ICE just bought a tool that tracks the location of hundreds of millions of phones every single day without a warrant. According to documents reviewed by 404 Media, ICE now has access to a private surveillance platform that is updated daily with billions of pieces of location data. This isn't data from a phone company. It's location data secretly harvested from the apps on your phone, your games, your weather apps, and then sold to data brokers. Now ICE is buying it to create what is essentially a live map of your life. They're not just tracking a few people. Documents say the tool can process billions of daily location signals from hundreds of millions of mobile devices. The government was caught doing this in 2023. An inspector general said it was illegal. I stopped briefly. Now they're doing it again. Your phone is a tracking device, and ICE just bought the master dashboard.
I'm sick of it.
And did you see...
I'm sick of it.
Speaking of, are we talking about ICE? Did you see that Bad Bunny's supposed to be performing at the Super Bowl?
Yes,
and they said ICE going to be at the Super Bowl?
That's not funny.
It really... I ain't going to lie.
That's not... Like, that's really, really not funny. It's not funny.
It's a little funny.
No, that's not.
Because I don't know if it's true or not.
That's not funny. If they was cracking jokes about us like that, it would not be funny.
They do, though.
And it's still not funny.
It's not funny, but they do crack the jokes.
But let's talk about him performing at the Super Bowl because people are mad.
Not us.
I'm not mad.
All the black people are like, hey, I've been trying to learn Spanish.
I think that what is happening with the Super Bowl and the performance, the artists that are being chosen, is showing what we are, and that is diverse here in America. There's been... If you weren't feeling it when Beyonce was there, cool. You had Katy Perry. If you weren't
Shakira,
you had Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre and them. You had Kendrick. Like, there's
Dude,
been
we
a,
had Bruce Springsteen.
There's been a lot of
Aerosmith.
There's been a lot of diversity in the people who have performed. So that's why I'm not mad. I think every demographic done got some representation there, and it's their time.
For sure,
it's their time.
But that also goes into where is it? So pretty much there was an app that people could use to say, hey, we see ICE people here. It's called ICE Block.
I heard about that.
There we go. I found it right here. So Apple removes IceBlock and similar tracking apps from the App Store. The app, which went viral earlier this year, allowed users to lawfully share information about where they've seen ICE agents within a 5-mile radius of their location, and also share details of their clothing of the clothing agents are wearing. I mean, what's the difference between this and Waze?
Right.
According to various media reports, Apple said it removed the apps after it was contacted by law enforcement about safety risks associated with IceBlock and similar apps. We reached out to the Apple today demanding they remove the IceBlock app from their App Store, and Apple did so, said U.S. Attorney General Pamela Bondi in an email statement. I'm getting so they can't see my face. I'm getting so pissed because the pop-up keeps saying, hey, do you want the newsletter? I hit the X, I already stopped. The Justice Department did not respond to questions regarding details on the app's order to be taken down and how many were on its list. It's worth noting that IceBlock does not collect or store any user data, which TechCrunch has confirmed by analyzing the app's network traffic as part of a test. The takedown comes in the wake of mounting tensions between the Trump administration and those who oppose the government's hardline immigration agenda. And I was actually going to bring this up. The shooting in Dallas.
Pause. What's the difference between that and all these little buzzers and radio things and Facebook group? You know what I'm talking about.
I think the difference is we actually have, and it's actually about to come up in this thing, but we actually have physical proof of it going left. Now, we don't even know if these people use that.
Of what going left?
ICE? Yeah, you know there was a shooting and with the yes. ICE agent. So yes. That's what it's talking about right here. And so I can see from that use case of why they'd be like, this could be dangerous to our people. Because let's think about it. To be honest.
But is it dangerous if, like, you know what I'm talking about with the scanners? That's what's the difference between that and the scanners?
Because I don't think people are going to actively say, hey, we're going to do something to the police.
Yeah, you see what happened when they went to, what was it, New York, Jersey, wherever they was at, ICE, and they got beat up.
Yeah. Because to be honest, you know, these people offer some good benefits to work for ICE. All these people just trying to do a job, like, to be totally
honest.
Wait,
did you just see that there was something about... if you work for ICE, you get your student loans. They had like 150,000 applications.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Who wouldn't?
It was student loans, and it was a big sign-on bonus. Yeah, like $50,000. Yep.
Yeah, who wouldn't work? Hey, listen, ICE. Person delivering my food today couldn't speak English. He took it to next door to the auto dealership.
I'm
go get him.
Literally.
He can't even do DoorDash right. Like, if you put it in your navigation, it's going to say you have arrived. Or whatever it says in Spanish. But, yeah, it's saying amount of tensions between the ICE agents and everything else. So I understand why. I think that it kind of...
So ICE and Border Patrol are cousins?
I don't know.
But to me, it seems like ICE is a bit more aggressive in their approach than Border... Border Patrol can be aggressive, too. I'm not saying that
yeah,
they're
but
not.
I think...
But ICE is... I feel like ICE is in the field.
Yeah, ICE is doing, I guess they just, I don't know how, I've never looked into how they know who's illegal. Like, hey, they just see people who don't got no papers or they've been tipped off.
I don't know how they determine either because to me it becomes a like prejudice, like you're being prejudiced. How do you know?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Because somebody speaks Spanish or because somebody is foreign?
I don't know. They have all the data though because, you know, I mean, out here, you can bet that a lot of the illegals, they pay straight cash.
I'm going to tell you what happened back home. There's a big factory, and ICE pulled up to the factory. And while they were, people were, like, hiding in the bathroom. People were leaving. Like, it was bad. Like everybody who was, quote, unquote, illegal or suspected of being illegal was taken. Like lunch pails still there. Vehicles still left there. Not able to reach out to any family. It's really awful. Awful. And I just be thinking about, like, that's somebody's parent who probably got a baby at school, right? You ain't going to see him no more?
Yeah. The other day out here, a young lady I follow on my Facebook, I think her daughter's in middle school, and the daughter...
In this area, DFW?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got to see a classmate attempt to unalive themselves in class. Well, not got to see... Observe or witness, that's a better thing, because got to see seemed like that was something you was looking for. So witness that. And so all those kids witnessed something traumatic like that.
I feel like I seen that on the news or something.
I don't think I ever would have, like, at school, I never thought about that And it just, it goes into why as parents or whoever's a guardian to teach kids, hey, be nice to each other. You never know
what people are going through at home. For real.
Don't talk about kids. Everybody, you know, because as a kid, you know, the stuff that you, this every day you take for granted, you got running water. You can get your clothes washed. Absolutely. All this different stuff.
Just going home and being comfortable is something that people take for granted. Just going home and just feeling comfortable at home. It's people who hate going home.
Yeah, for sure. That's why we got to return to office. man. But other than all, though, this is crazy how technology can be used to be beneficial, but it's kind of that gray area.
Let's talk about Roblox, because they kind of fit into this scenario here, just like they asked Apple to take it down. So Roblox, everybody know what it is. It's a game, right? If you don't know what it is, think about YouTube and how YouTube is full of videos. That's Roblox, but full of games. And so there's this guy named Schlepp. Schlepp had been playing Roblox since he was like 8, I want to say. He ended up being groomed on the platform, and he tried to commit suicide when he was 15. His parents reached out, obviously, to Roblox to be like, you know, hey, like, this is what's happening with our kid. They sent him to suicide hotline. I get that from a legal perspective. It was limited. You know, they couldn't do too much. They'd be crossing some boundaries and lines there from their legal side. But the issue is that they sent this. So he basically devoted his life and his skill set to helping uncover perverts. I don't know any other way to. That's what I call them. Off of Roblox. So kids would basically contact him and be like, hey, so-and-so is trying to talk to me. And they would do whatever, a little sting, right, to catch the person. So I think he caught like 3 to 5 people, and he received a cease and desist from Roblox. Why y'all didn't just work with him? So it's just like another example of technology being abused. What was the point of view? You want to keep him on the platform?
Man, them people know what them people are doing on that platform.
No, factual. And that's why I made that series, because parents really don't know. Especially like, there are a lot of like dads who will sit down and play the game with their kids, but a lot of women are not necessarily gamers, so they don't really know what's going on. Like, they know that their kid is asking for Robux, but they don't know for real what it's being used for, like the purpose of the game. So I got so many calls from so many of my friends with kids. The kids was calling trying to check me mad because I said something about the game, but it really is something that you have to be mindful. Just like you don't want your kid just on YouTube, unsupervised, right? Most parents don't, because they know the different type of stuff that the kids can be exposed to. It's the same thing with Roblox, but there's a chat function, and there's I can talk to you function, and I can send you stuff function. So it just opens up a lot of doors versus it being, I'm just watching your videos, and maybe I'm leaving a comment. Now I'm in the game talking to you. If your mom ain't come in the room and check on you, you've been talking to this person all night, right? Or all day. Or, you know, when school was out, kids was playing the game all day and all night. Parents would sleep, kids were still playing the game.
Yeah, I think, too, it's what we always talk about, kids having too much privacy, unlimited access. For a certain age, kids...
Certain age, for sure.
That game shouldn't be in their room, it needs to be in the living room.
That's one of the things that I said as well, because at least... You're more likely to, you know, maneuver through the house, and you're going to catch something. You might hear something, right?
But what's funny is boomers and Gen X. Like, my mom is technically Gen X, but my dad is a boomer, but she's 4 years after him. So it's like, what, boom X? I don't know what you want to call it. But it's funny, it's like, when they didn't know nothing about the internet, they were so worried about us being on MySpace and everything.
So worried. Like, and we were actually being friends with Tom and our friends. We weren't really leaning left and right. You might be friends with somebody that's in your city that maybe you didn't go to school with, but it wasn't on a stranger tip like it is today.
I think it was, but the difference is at least they were concerned. It wasn't free reign. Like, think about it. Internet wasn't as accessible then.
Yes, but I feel like... it's worse today. Just like you said, we had chat rooms, we had hotlines to call and talk to people that we didn't know, right? We still had those occurrences, but I feel like it's different today. It's starting, we were a little bit older. These are like 6-year-olds playing Roblox, right? if your mama didn't give you no Robux and I tell you I'm finna give you $50 if you do X, Y, and Z, you probably gonna do X, Y, and Z, especially if you ain't never got no money on Robux. If you ain't getting love at home and now I'm being your friend and I'm being nice to you and I'm giving you a little money so you can have fun in the game, we building that. I'm grooming you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it need to be that. And it's tough too because it's like, hey, I feel like there should be an age based on whatever rooms. And I don't know how they're going to do this to where they've actually verified a person's
age
and say, okay, you are older than this. Like, they had this technology where you can look at your face and stuff like that, but that's one way. I mean,
we saw what happened with the, what was the app, the T app, and the pictures and the verification and all that foolishness. Yeah,
so there are ways around that. So it's really tough. And that's why it just goes on to the parents. It's like, hey, stop trying to be so cool with your kid because they want to do all this. And, hey, you get on the game and play.
I was about to say the same. You get on the game so you can see. Because even the people that I talk to, like my brother, he told me that he goes in and he looks to see who his kids are friends with. And that's because he done played the game. He know how off the chain it can get. He's seeing what games
they
playing.
Oh, yeah, they be in there having church and shootouts.
He told the kids how to – he taught them how to report someone, how to block someone. Like, he told me he go in there and he checking their messages. These are kids, though. You know, like – but people aren't doing that because you don't know. You don't know that there's a message center.
Yeah, because these people are posing as your friend.
Yeah.
And kids don't understand that. And by the time they understand, it's too late.
Yep. Yep.
It's by the time I understand, it's too late. And that made me go to, let me see where it's at. It was a screenshot I had. It was from Reddit. It said, company asked for salary expectations, rejected me, then reposted the job with higher pay.
Wait, say it again.
The company asked this person for salary expectations. They rejected them, then reposted the job with a higher pay range. He said, I spent weeks interviewing with this tech startup, 3 rounds plus a take-home coding assignment. The whole time they kept emphasizing their transparent culture and fair compensation structure. When we finally got to discussing salary, they asked for my expectations first. I researched thoroughly and gave a range based on the market rates for my experience level, 85 through 95K. They responded that my expectations were slightly high for our budget, but they see what they can do. 2 days later, rejection email saying they're going with other candidates whose expectations better align with the role. Today, 1 week later, I see that they reposted the exact same job with a salary range of 95 to 110K, higher than what I asked for. I'm not even mad about getting the job anymore. I'm just insulted they lied about their budget instead of being straight with me. Why waste everyone's time with this game? Have you dealt with companies playing these salary mind games during interviews?
Yeah. And I don't think we will ever be in a place to where it's just like people in real life. If you come across good people, you come across good people. But we can't expect everyone to be a good person, especially in recruiting. Like it is nasty. It's worse stuff than that's going on. And I mean, not saying that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, but like it's. We hope that people treat us well and, you know, that people treat us well and they handle us appropriately. But it's clearly not the reality.
Yeah, it's people versus the machine. Yeah. I mean.
And then, I do feel bad for recruiters too because they do get a lot of slack. And we don't know unless you know.
Sometimes
right?
It's not on them.
Exactly. It's just it's the way that the company is ran. It's the way that they go about. It's the tools they use. And they can only do so much. So I do feel bad because they do get a lot of slack. But just like you said, sometimes it's stuff they can control. Sometimes it's stuff that's out of their control. They're not the head honcho.
Yeah.
But they still got a boss.
The crazy thing is sometimes how recruiters are lying to you based on what they've been told to tell you versus the truth. Like that situation I told you about, hey, when I didn't get a job, it was because they had already gave an offer. And I would have got an offer, but they was interviewing me anyway, thinking the person was not going to accept. You should have just waited until they declined.
Yeah. And before then you bring somebody else. Yeah. Wasting time.
You should have gave them X amount of time. Like, that was a whole thing that pissed. Like, the people who was interviewing me didn't even know that an offer was out. So they was pissed off, too, because not only did
they
you waste.
They felt like they was wasting their time,
yeah,
too.
Exactly. And then my friend still there. She was like, this is the reason why I never told none of y'all to apply here, because this is how they do. Mm. And that's why I don't vouch for them at all. I'd be like, whenever I go on my grandstand to like companies I can't stand, they're going to be highlighted at the top. For real.
I got NFL cybersecurity defense. So let's talk a little bit more about how football meets cybersecurity. So we all recall what happened on draft day with Shedeur Sanders, one of the hottest quarterbacks in the game, clock it. But he got a call, supposedly, the New Orleans Saints GM. He thought it was life-changing, except it was a prank. A 21-year-old college kid stole the number off of his dad's iPad, and the dad obviously happened to be one of the defensive coordinators for the Falcons. So that one slip was an entire cybersecurity lesson, because if a prank call can mess with the draft day, imagine what real hackers can do. So NFL teams are basically billion-dollar tech companies with shoulder pads. If you think about all of the different technologies that they're in control of or in possession of, they got iPads with playbooks on them. They have the Wi-Fi with for the stadium that can house thousands of people. You have biometric scans at the gates. You have the betting applications that they use, sensitive emails between the staff and the members that they're sending back and forth, which just allows for there to be a large attack surface. Now, if you think about the Cleveland Browns, they have three people that are keeping they have three cybersecurity people that are keeping the whole entire organization afloat. So I hope they can pay good just for there to be three people.
I think they do.
So the Packers got hit with a skimming attack in their pro shop. The 49ers suffered a ransomware attack. And then we have sports betting that's blowing up. I think as they said, it's like a $100 billion industry. So everything basically has money riding on it, which means that bad actors are obviously looking for ways to influence those games. Are they hacking the travel schedules? Are they targeting athletes? Things like that. Now, when you think about national games, then we start to expand that attack surface and the risk, right? Each country has its own privacy laws. The Browns have rights to Nigeria under the NFL's global marketing push. So not only do they have to think about, domestically, but they also have to think about international data laws, privacy, different cultural differences and stuff. So vendor vetting, ticketing, concessions, biometrics, all of that we're starting to see it be outsourced. And so now what we're seeing that the article is talking about is that they are starting to ask vendors tough questions. And this is specifically referencing like the Browns. So do you have a CISO? Do you have a disaster recovery plan? Do you do tabletop exercises? If not, then they are putting in the contract, you have X amount of time frame to implement this. So 6 months to encrypt your data, for example. You have a year to hire a security lead or you're out. So they're not just trusting you off rip, which is what we've seen in the past. And last year we talked about pick a breach. We talked about so many vendors that compromised companies last year. So they're not just trusting, but they're also going back and verifying that these things have been put into place. And they're training their coaches and their scouts to think in terms of protecting their game plans as well, which is another big thing, right? Somebody get your game plans and we know what to do to beat y'all, right? Just thinking about cybersecurity in football, not just
players
on the field.
When you said that, I never thought about that use case till now, because
which one?
That was all the stuff with the Patriots. Like they used to steal
the place.
Yeah. So I didn't know they was going digital now with like, cause I wouldn't share those digitally. I literally would keep them old school, paper, dry erase board, all that. I would not put them on that.
There's some team that like they help hide the plays that it's that guy who has someone that's pulling them back. You know what I'm talking about? The coach? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, whoever they are. But also I saw something that I thought was AT&T developed a helmet for people who are deaf. And it shows the plays like in visual format.
Really?
Yeah. I saw it somewhere. I don't know where. It might have been at in the Discovery District somewhere in there a while ago. But it's an actual helmet for people who are deaf. And it's, obviously they can't hear. So it's like a visualization that tells them like what play they're running and what they need to do. So they're able to communicate with the team and the coach like they would be able to if they could actually,
That's pretty tough, because I know if I was the opposing team, I'd say, everybody make a lot of noise. Like, you know, they can't hear or something that'll distract the signal. Them. Like, if you bring a signal.
But that's camera. Also a security risk, too, right? How is that being secured?
Yeah.
Can somebody go in and
mess up the signal?
Exactly. You see us talking about that security stuff.
But no, I never, like, that's, if they are doing that, because I mean, I already know they use the Surface tablets. They get a deeper look at the analytics and tasks. Cause, like, NFL, much like NBA, is very analytics driven. Like, they use data for a lot of decisions that they make. So when people saying, hey, throw the ball, hey, well, the analytics said, hey, on 4th and 23, 75% of the time, the defense blitzes, so they're going to hit them with a screen. So that's just that.
Big data.
Let's see. I think I didn't get a chance to go through this, but I always try to find something that may even not bother, but affect people who don't typically care about this type of content, but it still affects them. And so it's like, it says Ted Cruz blocks bill that would extend privacy protections to all Americans.
Where is he at?
Florida, right?
Yeah, I thought
no,
so.
No, Texas. Senator Ted Cruz has blocked an effort to pass legislation that would have extended data privacy protections for federal lawmakers and public officials to everyone in the United States. On Monday night, Senator Ron Wyden asked the U.S. Senate for a unanimous consent from fellow senators to pass this legislation, S.2850, or Protecting Americans from Doxing and Political Violence Act. So I wonder if this is not necessarily on for us, but for political people. Wyden's bill, if passed, would have taken bipartisan past provisions designed to protect government officials, lawmakers, and their families from having their personal information sold or traded by data brokers and extend them to every American and person living in the United States. But, I mean, it kind of worked for the people. So, I mean, hey, that's kind of what you sign up for. What they probably should have is numbers that people can see, but they some type of way route to different numbers. So nobody definitely has their private numbers. Or I don't even know how telecom does this, like officials and stuff like that. Do they have their own separate batch of numbers? You know, like you got the private cloud?
Yeah.
Do they got like private numbers that aren't the same type of...
For who?
You know how like we get these scam recruiters and stuff messaging us on work phones and stuff like that? I wonder if the government is protected against that by having phone numbers only they can use.
They have... I know for sure that... AT&T has a separate network that they use for emergency services in the event something happens that, you know, obviously services can continue. I don't know if it's everywhere, though. But I don't know if it's, like, by state or what the case is. But I know that there is an instance of a private network that is for things like that.
Okay. Members of Congress should not receive special treatment, Wyden said on the Senate floor. Our constituents deserve protection from violence, stalking, and other criminal threats. Protecting everyone is the most effective way to protect U.S. military and intelligence personnel, including undercover officers, Wyden added. Data brokers are part of a worldwide multi-billion-dollar industry of companies that profit from hoarding and selling access to huge amounts of Americans' personal, financial, and granular location information, often collected from phones and other devices connected to the internet. This data gets sold, including to governments, which don't need a warrant for commercially obtainable data. The collection of huge banks of data also comes with its own risk, including security lapses and data breaches. Information brought by data brokers has been used to dox people, and in recent cases is linked to the shooting of two Minnesota state lawmakers. I remember that. One of whom died, the killer allegedly obtained their home addresses from data brokers. Cruz was the sole objecting senator to Wyden's bill, claiming without evidence that the bill could disrupt law enforcement, such as knowing where sexual predators are living. Daniel Schumann, the executive director at Nonprofit American Governance Institute, told TechCrunch that Cruz's claim was wrong and that federal law already requires a publicly available registry of sex offenders, which it does. That registry lists offenders' names and addresses online so parents and communities know where they live. And Schumann added that Wyden's bill leaves that system fully intact, explicitly permits law enforcement to share information with at-risk individuals and exempts the press so news outlets can continue reporting freely on offenders. Nothing in the bill will prevent parents from being notified or limit public access to this critical information, said Schumann. Cruz also objected to a second piece of legislation that Wyden introduced soon after S.2851, which would have extended the protections for federal officials and lawmakers to state officials and their staff, as well as survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. So, yeah, it's like the whole article So I thought that was pretty interesting because, I mean, they're not going through great lengths to protect us.
So why are you going to great lengths to protect them? And everybody need to be protected.
Right. And I think it all starts with like, hey, like we don't have any GDPR here. All these phones say, hey, can we share this data and all this stuff? So it starts with the phone companies. It starts with them. At one point in time, I wasn't getting no spam calls. Now all of a sudden, I'm getting hit up with spam all the time.
Please. Like, please stop it. It's so ridiculous. Christina, text me again and see what happened. Text me about a job and see what happened again.
I remember that. You sent me that. They sent me something, too. I was like, bro, I'm not going to respond to y'all. I said, I'm not going to respond to y'all at all. Like, it's crazy.
I have shut down Guts U.S. cyber defense. So, what is really going on with this government shutdown? Does it put cybersecurity on the bench when we need it the most? So, the agency that protects our power grid, our water supply, and basically all the critical infrastructure that keeps this country running. That is CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. And right now, thanks to the shutdown, they've had to furlough 65% of their staff. So that means that there is only a third of their team that's still working. Now, why that is scary is at the same time, there's a law called CISA 2015, which basically protected companies from legal trouble when they shared threat intel. And so basically that law expired. So now some companies' lawyers are telling them, hey, don't share attack data with the government. Don't share it with anyone, which means that there is no more of that collective defense. So we're no longer all working together to stop the hackers. Basically, everything just got a little bit weaker. And so if you think about a lot of the China-based hackers, they are stepping up their tactics. And their ransomware crews are still obviously out here wrecking systems. So with that, the timing could actually be, it couldn't be any worse. Experts are already warning that this could have global effects because the U.S. doesn't just defend itself. We do share threat intel with our allies as well. And so if we stop talking, the whole defense chain, it basically breaks down. And so right as we are approaching, obviously, Cybersecurity Awareness Month, or the month is being kicked off, we're supposed to be raising awareness, but we're actually seeing that our agency even itself is running at one-third of its manpower. So for regular folks, if you think about your utilities, banks, hospitals, websites that you use every day, these could potentially become more vulnerable if an attack hits. And the people who are supposed to be coordinating that defense, if they are obviously out on furlough because they're not full staff. So it's really just highlighting that cybersecurity doesn't stop just because obviously Congress can't agree on a budget with the shutdown. And right now we just want to make sure that we still are spreading that awareness. And the big thing is that for folks to not stop talking to each other, because it's not up for one organization is not enough to defend, right? If you didn't tell your friend and your friend didn't tell you, oh, that happened to us, this is what we did, you know, collective strength, better together than we are apart.
Yeah, that's typically what you see. Like in every industry, they have a certain collective that'll reach out to all companies and say, hey, we're seeing these type of attacks or something in our sector. So I think that's definitely cool. And I forgot I had this one. We almost skated by this one, but I wanted to talk about it because it was big over the last month or so. And it was about the Salesforce Sales Drift breach. Hacking group claims theft of 1 billion records from Salesforce customer databases. So a notorious, predominantly English-speaking hacking group has launched a website to extort its victims, threatening to release about 1 billion records stolen from companies who store their customer data in the cloud.
A billion is a lot.
Yeah, companies who store their customers' data in cloud databases hosted by Salesforce. The loosely organized group, which has been known as Lapsus, Scattered Spider, and Shiny Hunters, has published a dedicated data leak site on the dark web called Scattered Lapsus Hunters. The website, first spotted by threat intelligence researchers on Friday and seen by TechCrunch, aims to pressure victims into paying the hackers to avoid their stolen data published online. Contact us to regain control of data governance and prevent public disclosure of your data, reads the site. Do not be the next headline. All communications demand strict verification and will be handled with discretion. Over the last few weeks, the Shiny Hunters gang has allegedly hacked dozens of high-profile companies by breaking into their cloud-based databases hosted by Salesforce. So I'm going to have to put this image right there because, I mean, pretty interesting. Insurance giant Alliance Life, Google, fashion conglomerate Kering, the airline Qantas, car-making giant Stellantis, Credit Bureau TransUnion, and the employee management platform Workday, among several others, have confirmed that data was stolen in these mass attacks. The hackers' leak site lists several alleged victims, including FedEx, Hulu, Disney, Toyota Motors, none of which responded to a request for a comment on Friday. It's not clear if the companies known to have hacked but not listed on the hacking group's leak site have paid a ransom to the hackers to prevent their data from being published. When reached by TechCrunch, a representative from Shiny Hunter said there are numerous other companies that have not been listed, but declined to say why. At the top of the site, the hackers mention Salesforce and demand that the company negotiate a ransom, threatening that otherwise all your customers' data will be leaked. The tone of the message suggests that Salesforce has not yet to engage with the hackers. So it's a lot of stuff, but this, let me see, that way we can try to.
I think that's a good example of it's not if but when it'll happen to you. Because a lot of people still think that they can't be breached, but you can.
Right. And then, so I'm just going to use the AI overview. This is the first time using it in real time. This stems from Salesforce Drift, refers to the data breach and subsequent security incident in August 2025. That exploited a compromised third-party Salesloft Drift chatbot integration to access Salesforce customer data via stolen OAuth tokens. The sophisticated supply chain attack by threat actor UNC6395 exfiltrated sensitive data such as AWS keys, passwords, and contact information from hundreds of organizations. In response, Salesforce and Salesloft took action, including revoking tokens, removing Drift from Salesforce AppExchange, and informing affected customers. So,
yikes.
Yeah, that's kind of like the gist of it. You can read more on it, but it was, I mean, it was pretty interesting, but it was big. Like, anybody, like I've been talking about it the last couple of episodes, anybody who's been working in security over the last 2 months have seen stuff keep on coming in for that just because it's everybody use Salesforce.
Everybody. For real.
And that's what happens when you use like a major tool.
Yep.
And that's why
something happens with that tool, that service, that platform.
And this is, I'm trying to see, would that be a third party or is technically would it be a fourth party? I don't know, because technically it's on Salesforce, but it's really the tool that they use with Salesloft and the Drift chatbots thing. And that's why I wanted to talk about that, because you were talking about putting out information in the chat box and how this stuff can be leveraged. Because what they were doing was they was using the chatbot to social engineer these people and trick them and get information from them.
Exactly why you need to know what people are talking about in all these bots. I have one more.
Go ahead.
Cyber Awareness Month in Illinois. So I thought this one was pretty cool. So the governor in Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, has basically made a public service announcement about Cybersecurity Awareness Month. So the state is rolling out free tools and resources through their Department of Innovation and Technology to help everyday people lock down their accounts. The cheat code of some of the advice that they basically gave was, one, turn on two-factor authentication. Make your passwords long, strong, and unique. Don't recycle the same one everywhere. Keep your browser and OS updated. Updates aren't just annoying. They are security patches. Watch out for phishing. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Don't click it. Don't trust it. Delete it. Check your bank account. Stay on top of suspicious charges before they snowball. And talk to your family, because cybersecurity at home is a team sport. He said that cybersecurity isn't just for IT folks. It's for everybody. And that was, for me, the real message. I thought it was just dope to see someone speak out on behalf of, you know, their area on Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Just like he said, it's not just for people that work in tech. It is for everybody. Everybody needs to know how to keep themselves safe, especially as things continue to advance.
All right, so I was on Business Insider, and I saw this article earlier, and I didn't add it, but it was pretty much the headline on the side says, "Deepfakes go mainstream." And it says, "Sora 2 makes me realize the AI future really is here. It's wonderful and terrifying." The AI future we've been promised is finally here, and it's both wonderful and terrifying. OpenAI's new Sora 2 video app is fun, it's delightful, and silly and goofy and creative. I have genuinely loved making funny videos that use images of me and my friends. But read that last sentence again. The flip side of all this wonder is also the terrifying part. This is the first time I felt AI get close to mimicking real life. In other words, you might have to have a hard time telling what's real and what's fake when you watch these Sora-made videos. Fakes, especially if they're made with the intent to mislead or harm, could be a big issue. Sora feels like a step into a new world where we haven't quite figured out the rules. If you haven't used it yet, a primer, Sora 2 lets you upload your picture and then lets you prompt it to make videos using your image. You can also choose to let your likeness be used by your friends or just anyone in the world. That's where a lot of the Sam Altman Robs the Store videos came from, for instance. That's crazy. Because, you know, last week I was talking about how Tank had this press conference with Jake Paul, and they had made a video of him kissing Jake Paul. And it went viral, like, on Twitter.
Of who? The little light-skinned dude? Yeah.
Not you calling him the little light skinned dude.
I mean, he is.
AI that finally blows my mind. In the last few years, I've used generative AI apps like ChatGPT in lots of ways, most of which aren't particularly exciting or interesting. Things like basic searches or work productivity stuff, AI feels like a useful tool, but nothing has truly blown my mind until Sora 2. And I think they're talking about more and more stuff with, like, Sora 2. But this is, like, that's, I think, this part I always worried about with this is,
it's dope, right? It's dope, but it's a lot of risk.
Because if you and your friends start beefing out, okay, I got you.
Yeah, I'm going to ruin your life, your marriage, mm-hmm. your family. So there are dope things you can do with it. And obviously when there's dope things you can do, there are also things that you can do that are harmful. And that's.
Yeah, my God.
That's the bad part. And obviously the people who are developed this are not thinking like, oh yeah, this, we can't wait for somebody to use this for malicious purposes.
Yeah. So like my guy Antoine Matthews used to say, don't think about the use case, think about the abuse case.
Exactly.
And it's funny. It says, I was scrolling down, I said, Jake Paul endorses this, or does he? And it says, I'll leave you with one last thought after a few days using Sora 2. Celebrities who make their living in large part through owning the exclusive rights to their faces and voices are so far not on Sora any large numbers that I've seen. An exception is Altman, who lets it rip as soon as Sora went live. Thanks, Jake. The social media star and boxer has a long history of early success on new platforms and certainly has a playful approach to monetizing his personal brand. I'm glad he's on Sora too, especially since he's such a big fan of Business Insider. Okay, so Jake is adopting it because, hey, he's trying to make money off of it. But it's definitely, you know, interesting times when it comes down to all this stuff, for real.
Yeah. I'm thinking about right now, what would it be like for me if I wasn't in the field? Like, what would be my take on all of this? Like,
you got to think about it. You're not paying attention to the risk. All you're using it for, people have replaced using Google and they use ChatGPT. And this is coming, you know, think about it. Teachers are complaining about
this. Before we even get to ChatGPT, you know, when TikTok came out, they were more searched than Google was. So I'm absolutely not shocked that you're good. I'm not shocked that ChatGPT has replaced Google. And that's crazy for Google. They've been the number one search, right?
That's because people like how it's packaged, but they don't understand. But you have to vet it.
I was just going to say, I just Googled something quickly yesterday, and I was actually impressed because I would have typically put it into, just like you said, into chat. But I was like, let me just put this in Google. And I was pleased with the answer that it gave back to me. So we might want to go back to using Google because they got Gemini, which is, you know, similar, but it's right in that. It's right on that main page, just like if you're... Yeah,
that's what I just did just now when I was like, let me explain to them about the...
So it makes it less of a process for you. You don't have to go to Gemini to get the answer. You can just type it into Google just like you normally would.
Just like, I'm pretty sure that's what you do with Bing or Internet Explorer with Copilot, right?
Yep.
Same thing.
Yep. Because Copilot has it on in the browser a little on the side. Yeah.
And on my desktop, I definitely use Copilot like a lot standalone. But let me go right here. I had, like, I think I found, like, a couple of bookmarked stuff to react to. I think this is a pretty cool one. We around the same age, so let's think about this.
Question for my millennial friends. Do you guys remember Gateway computers from back in the day? I just remember them, like, being this, like, cow-themed computer company. I'm not really sure why. And at the time, like back before Y2K, they were actually called Gateway 2000. And I'm not sure what it
was. My grandma had a Gateway.
In the late 90s and our love of like names that were like a name and a number.
Gateway 2000. Gateway.
Andre 3000. Power Man 5000. Matchbox 20. Blink 182. Need I Go On. But the inside of these stores, too, was crazy to me. This is like an exiled Edward Snowden desperately trying to remember what the inside of a Chipotle looked like. But all of this aggressive theming and everything aside, it was crazy because we're still selling these like bog standard, boring 90s computers. Like, but they would still try to put them in interesting situations. Like in here, we're in a barn. We got a cow on the screen and stuff like that. Because again, like we love cows. We love number names and we love cows. I don't know what was going on. And the stores, eventually they rebranded to just Gateway because we didn't like numbers anymore. But this was like the Gateway Country Store. Yeah, we're going to go down to the old country
store. The branding was crazy.
The branding here was insane. We had these like crossover events. It was like McDonald's, we sell beef, and the computer's cow theme. So it was insanity. Do you guys remember the Gateway computer days? Do you have any memories of these, or did it?
I definitely remember.
Yeah. Gateway's A.
I wish I'm so mad that I don't remember. Obviously, I was a kid. I was a kid, elementary school kid. But I do not remember what my first computer was, and it would be just super dope. My grandma does have one of my first computers, but I don't know if it was the first.
Yeah, I believe her. I think the very first, very first one I probably have to use access to all the time was my grandma's Gateway. And I think after that we got, it was like 2004 or something like that, we had a...
And that was about the time that I got like my, because my sister was, I think it was actually even before she was born, and I think she was born in 04. So yeah, like that was my first computer.
Yeah. Oh, she had the same age as my little brother.
And I remember, you know, my mom wasn't super techie and savvy, so I remember I put the whole thing together. But this was back in the day when everything was color coordinated, right? And obviously you can tell if it's going to fit in that spot or not. But yeah, a kid building a computer, but not building, just putting it together because it was already built.
Right. And then let's see. Oh, I thought about this was funny. And then we'll go into like the last one. Don't go
breaking protocols. I saw this. Please stick to the handbooks and the at least they being fun. I see you stealing print of paper, think you won't get caught,
but I will report you. file a claim, you got a laceration by workers' compensation. See,
this is fun.
We should do something like this for a security awareness.
We should. Protect sensitive company info.
These are places not to pat. My neck, my back. It's the same, gotta do that.
All right. That's enough for me.
What the heck he got on?
To finance.
Money. I would definitely work there.
That is engaging to the people that are watching it.
Let me laugh at this real quick. Charles sent me this, and it was hilarious.
So that pretty much sums up the interview. Do you have any questions for us?
Yeah. Do you fuck with me?
Did he just ask if we fuck with him? I'm pretty sure he did. Can he do that? I mean, he just did it. So.
Can
you repeat your question?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Do you fuck with me? Type shit.
Okay, so yeah, he did. He's totally being serious. Okay, no, I'll handle this. Okay, so what you just did takes guts. You're hired.
I was like,
that picture is sending me.
I would definitely try that on a on something that I, what you call it, that I don't care about. All right, this is the last one. She always has.
I like her. She does have
her stuff. Everybody, I'm about to say something that corporate recruiters do not want me to say out loud, but I'm not here to protect the system. I'm here to tell you the truth. So don't kill the messenger. I'm Deepali Vyas, your elite recruiter and executive coach with 25 years in the business and in the boardroom. I know exactly how the system works, and I'm here to save you a lot of pain in your job search. So let's get into it. Here's the corporate truth. If all you're doing is applying online, your resume is probably going into a virtual trash can. Let me explain. When I say corporate recruiters, I'm talking about the talent acquisition folks who are full-time employees inside a company. Their job, fill dozens of open roles, manage the flood of resumes in their ATS, and track time to fill metrics. But here's the dirty secret. They don't actually believe the best candidates are applying online. Their real job is networking internally, chasing referrals, and recruiting top performers from their competitors. The ATS, it's there for compliance and optics. It looks like access, but it's not where the magic happens. And that's the difference between them and me. I'm an executive recruiter on the outside. Companies bring me in when they want the best in the market, not just the best in the database. I hunt, I persuade, and I operate at the board level. Corporate recruiters, by contrast, are managing volume, juggling hiring managers, and they don't always have the luxury of chasing excellence in the same way, which is exactly why they like partnering with search firms like mine. We help relieve the pressure and extend their reach. So what does that mean for you? If you're not already being recruited every week, you need to hack the system and become an internal referral. Ask a friend, a colleague, or a former boss to put your name forward. That's your golden ticket. Because if your entire strategy is apply online, you're not in the game. You're in the pile. Be honest. How many jobs have you applied for online this month without hearing back? Drop it in the comments. I want to see how deep this problem really goes. And if you want unfiltered truths like this, the ones the system doesn't want you to know about, follow me. My links are in my bio. And if you want the inside edge, don't forget to sign up for my newsletter. I send it out.
Nah, but that's facts, though.
It is facts.
And that's why, I mean, people have heard me say it many times, but I always teach, all right, we're going to try to reach out to somebody at the company. Yep. Or sometimes try to find somebody on the team. Like, I was able to do that for a company that's actually gotten a lot of steam over the last 5 years. And it really was more so me just showing my clients how it worked. And I showed her, and she was like, I didn't know it was that simple. I was like, yeah, it's very simple. I was like, this is what we do. I was like, they may not respond. Basically, they may get around and respond to your message. They'll look at your thing, and they'll see if they like you or not. And I did it another time where the guy responded, but he felt like I didn't stay at companies long enough, which I thought was, like, kind of odd, but you know, when someone nitpicks,
they want you to die, ride, and lie. They want you to be the, we young.
If somebody nitpicking like your tenure, it's like you, they just don't really want exactly. you to come there. And it's totally fine. You're better off just telling me, I don't think you're a good fit versus nitpicking my tenure. Because if you actually pay attention, because the thing that pissed me off was that he was like, hey, could you explain these tenure things? So I explained them, and he has never said nothing back. And I was like, cool. You know. Yeah. I was like, cool. He ain't say nothing back. It is what it is, but
I almost cussed. I caught myself.
It's cool. that's what this thing do to you. But I know we didn't talk about it a lot, but we're pretty much 9 episodes away from 200.
Ski, if you see us, say you trying to see what's up. What we doing?
I don't know yet.
Where are our friends at? That's a good question.
We got a lot of friends.
I know. They got to pull up on us.
I don't know. I want to do something like fun. I kind of want like make a event out of it. Like, we can do dinner, we can go do some entertaining, like just the people that helped us get to 200 and that just really
I want to have fun too. Like, I want to unwind and have fun with some of the people that have been guests. I think that'll be a good time. Like you said, fouling, make it an event.
VR video games.
I think we talked about karaoke. I think karaoke could be one of the first stops. I'm not saying that the whole night, but karaoke would be so fun. Maybe let's put that in the middle of the agenda after people get a little
bit. I wonder if there's a spot that got like everything we like where you can walk to different things like karaoke, mm-hmm. whatever. Like, that's like the ideal
place spot. Like, situation.
I wonder why they don't have that Village on the Parkway. That'd be dope.
It would. We gotta brainstorm.
Yeah, we could. Yeah. Because I mean,
it's coming quick. Before the end of year.
Yeah. Definitely. I don't know. We'll put some feelers out. If y'all made it to the end, y'all can kind of give us some
ideas,
recommendations of things that we probably could do that'd be probably like rememberable or stuff that we could do. Probably go like, you know what we could do? We can do an escape room.
No, it's not fun. I mean, it's
you gotta get cool. The right people though.
That's cool, but like, I want to party.
I mean, we could do that after we escape.
Okay. As long as there is a DJ, music, I'm down.
I mean, yeah. I mean,
I want to turn up.
You know where all the spots are. I don't. I'm washed.
I'm
tired.
I do.
Pun intended.
I'll be outside a little bit. I'll be outside a little
bit. Pun intended. But no, guys, I appreciate y'all for rocking with us. And if this is the only angle that y'all see, then I appreciate y'all for tuning in this long. And we out. Peace.